Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Dr. Zed Chu and Francine Foss. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center and an internationally recognized expert on colorectal cancer. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, and she's an expert in the treatment of lymphomas. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ed Chu is joined by Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. Rosa, a cancer survivor herself, is currently in her 10th term representing the 3rd District of Connecticut and has worked tirelessly throughout that time to advocate for cancer research and care.
What got you interested in focusing on cancer research?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, you know, most times the kinds of efforts that you focus on in any legislative body, and for myself in the Congress, when I was first elected to the Congress, I went with an interest in looking at healthcare issues, women's health, because I'm a survivor of ovarian cancer. It's now 23 years, and well, I'm cancer-free and was treated at Yale New Haven Hospital and did radiation therapy at the Hunter Radiation. You know, that experience in and of itself, when I had the opportunity to be able to serve in the House of Representatives, the whole issue of health-related issues was uppermost on my mind. So I had the opportunity there to, and I sit on the Appropriations Committee and on the Health, Education, and Human Services Subcommittee of Appropriations. And under that portfolio with Health and Human Services, we have jurisdiction over the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, the Center for Disease Control, and in the other subcommittee that I now chair, the Agricultural and Food and Drug Administration subcommittee, we have jurisdiction over the Food and Drug Administration. So there's a confluence of areas that focus directly on the on health and on research and I've been excited about that, and I have been, you know, these 10 terms in the Congress. My view is the NIH and CDC and the FDA are really the kind of crown jewels of our healthcare system, where we have the opportunity, particularly at the NIH, to do the kinds of research that is groundbreaking, looking at not only cancer, the National Cancer Institute, but of a variety of illnesses, and it's where we can look at biomedical research and how we can make progress in these efforts. And I've been proud to serve at a time between 1998 and 2003 where we have doubled the funding for the National Institutes of Health. Unfortunately, we had some lean years after that where the programs were flat funded, but I'm happy to tell you I think we're getting ourselves back on track in the economic recovery package, the stimulus program that we passed a few months ago. There's about $10.4 billion in research efforts for cancer and for other illnesses. So it's my direct experience and with a health issue that's brought me to this place.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your efforts with the stimulus package.
Sure.
Because obviously with this term in Congress, with President Obama coming on board, taking over as president end of January, and this huge stimulus bill, I didn't realize it was $10.4 billion for medical research. Mm-hmm. You know, what are some of the key goals for this stimulus package?
The efforts here were to look at how you can how we can create jobs, how we can look at economic growth for the future, and how we can make sure that we're able to maintain services, that's healthcare services, education, energy-related efforts. And it's the $10.4 billion is for research and research-related activities. again, the research is around cutting-edge illnesses. It's Alzheimer's, it's cancer, it's Parkinson's, heart disease. There's competitive effectiveness research on which treatments work best. And according to an organization called Research America, the investment could create 70,000 jobs.
And
help to stimulate the economy in a number of our states, including the state of Connecticut. Every dollar that we put toward biomedical research, and I don't make up these numbers, you get $2.50 pumped into the economy. Sometimes people don't understand the economics of the research, mm-hmm. and you have to deal with both the medical side of it as well as the economic side of it. We are on our way to distributing these funds. We've got about $8.2 billion that is going toward research priorities, another $400 million for the comparative effectiveness research. $1 billion is going to fund the construction and capital improvements at research universities. Some of the funding is going toward what was already in the pipeline that we couldn't get funded. And that received very high scores in terms of research, but couldn't get funded. You've got about $200 million going towards challenge grants to address different kinds of scientific and health research challenges that will benefit from a jumpstart by mm-hmm. these 2-year funds. Let me just say, which is very exciting for me, that we've learned that Yale and other Connecticut universities will receive over $3 million in research funding for a number of topics, genetic research equipment, nicotine dependence research, a whole variety of areas, and the funding is already coming through.
Oh, that's just fantastic. Now, do you see that this funding continuing? Because obviously, I guess there are concerns with all of the economic issues that you and President Obama are facing, that perhaps there may need to be greater prioritization to maybe get away from, to be diverted from medical research.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts on that? My own thoughts on that are we can't be diverted from that. The president's budget for 2010 didn't have as much money as I would have liked to have seen. It's only about $442 million. Mm. And I think we need to increase those dollars for research. Clearly, there's just been the recent $10.4 billion, which will sustain us for a while. But I think what we can't do is to have this research again drop off a cliff, and that what we need to do is to deal with the funds and resources that will allow us to sustain these efforts. The fact of the matter with research, and you know this as well as I do, is that you don't see the outcome just overnight.
That's right.
And we haven't, what we saw from our investments, 10, 15, 20 years ago, we are seeing the benefits of that now in terms of new discovery, new areas of treatment for some of these illnesses that have plagued us for a while. And if we do not now continue to make that investment, then we will not be making the kinds of medical breakthroughs that we have been able to make, because we will not have done the proper, if you will, seeding yep. of the field here in order to be able to to create a new opportunity for people to survive. I mean, what we're not doing here, the federal government deals with a lot of different areas. These are roads, bridges, parks, defense, and et cetera. But this is about life and mm-hmm. being able to look at a research that gives people a second chance at life.
And I think cancer research, I think, highlights what you just talked about, because the investment that Congress, the president, made in cancer research for the 2025 years mm-hmm. now really has paid huge right. dividends. We mm-hmm. have a better understanding of what causes cancer. There's just an amazing number of new treatments, what are called new targeted therapies
That's right.
that we can cure cancer. If we can't cure cancer, we certainly mm-hmm. are prolonging lives. Mm-hmm. And we now have these extraordinary methods to detect cancer at a much earlier stage. Mm-hmm. So you really do have to make that investment up front.
You're absolutely right. And just two things. So I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer 23 years ago. Today, when you think about the kinds of drugs, the kinds of research that have been done to address the issue. They just were not available, you know, 23 years ago. Those are the strides that we have to make. And I think one thing that's important for people to know is it's members of Congress or, you know, the administration, we are not determining where the money goes. Mm-hmm. We are not scientists, but we have the opportunity, and I believe I'm blessed with the opportunity, one, to be in the Congress, but two, to be on this subcommittee so that we can say, we are going to provide you with these resources. You and the scientific community will be the best. You will make the best determination of where it needs to go. Otherwise, when we are just pinpointing specific illnesses, and that, as sometimes can happen with other things, that gets to be potentially a very political process. Yes. That's not our job. We are not scientists, but we want to make sure that there are resources available to carry out this research.
Now, as you mentioned, you are a cancer survivor. You had ovarian cancer, mm-hmm. and you've played a key role in passing legislation to support ovarian cancer research, and in particular, Joanna's Law. Right. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what that legislation involves.
Mm-hmm. I'd be delighted to, because that is, and is a, to tell you that that is a bipartisan effort. You're looking at myself, a Democrat from Connecticut, Sandra Levin. Sandy Levin, who is from Michigan, another Democrat, but we have Dan Burton, who's from California, a Republican, Daryl Issa, who is from Florida, who was involved in that. Sometimes you think that people can't get along and work across the aisle, but we have worked across the aisle on this. And just so that you know, we introduced the law. It's an education campaign led by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's about increasing awareness and knowledge of health providers so that for women with respect to gynecological cancers. Oftentimes, we don't have providers who are trained in these areas or have the educational background to be able to do the kinds of diagnosis that is necessary for one to be able to treat these illnesses early. And we know mm-hmm. that early detection, early treatment is critical to survival. The program has been funded for the past 2 years. That is about the CDC is beginning a national awareness campaign about what the signs, what the symptoms are of gynecological cancers. Again, along with my colleagues, we're going to be introducing the bill again, and we'll be doing that next week.
Great. Well, you're listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'm here this evening with Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro discussing cancer research and her key support for cancer research and cancer patients.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2009, there'll be over 62,000 new cases of melanoma in this country, and about 2,400 patients will be diagnosed here in Connecticut alone. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. But when detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable. Clinical trials are underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center, and I'm here in the studio this evening with our Congresswoman, Rosa DeLauro, discussing cancer research and all of her great efforts on behalf of cancer patients. Congresswoman DeLauro, you were talking before the break about Joanna's Law, which focused on ovarian cancer, but also you've been a tremendous advocate for women with breast cancer. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what that has involved.
Sure. Thank you. And again, I thank you for the opportunity to be here to talk about some of these issues. It must be about 12 years ago, a surgeon from Connecticut, Dr. Kristen Zarfos, came to see me in my office. And what she was experiencing as a surgeon was that women who were having surgery for a mastectomy or for a lumpectomy, they were being sent home within sometimes less than 24 hours of care in the hospital. And those decisions were based on insurance coverage. She said to me, is there anything that we can do about this? Because in essence, it's kind of like drive-through mastectomy. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, people need more care in a hospital to avoid critical circumstances afterward. What we did was that we worked and put something called the Breast Cancer Patient Protection Bill together. It simply says that a doctor and patient will make the decision on length of stay, but that only asking for at the maximum 48 hours of coverage. Insurance coverage for a hospital stay. If it can be less than the 48 hours, then the doctor and the patient together will make that decision. So if there are no difficulties and you can go home, then you go home. Because as you know, when you do leave the hospital with breast cancer surgery, you usually have tubes that are tied to you, and the tubes with the fluid have to be drained. Mm-hmm. I know from my own experience when I went home from the hospital, that my husband, my stepkids, my mother, all very caring and solicitous, but they're not trained professionals, so that if something goes wrong, they can't make a diagnosis. So we're not asking for 2 weeks or a month, mm-hmm. or 6 weeks. We're asking for 2 days, for 48 hours of insurance coverage. I will tell you that, as I told you, I introduced that legislation 12 years ago. We were unable over the past 8 years to get a hearing on it. We were finally able to get a hearing last year, and it passed in the subcommittee, the full committee. When it went to the House of Representatives, it passed by a vote of 421-2.
Wow.
That tells you that there was tremendous support, again, in a bipartisan way, it hasn't yet come up in the United States Senate. We're going to introduce the bill again. But what's unfortunate is that insurance companies are still forcing women to leave the hospital too early, in my view, and that can have serious consequences. As I say, I'm not a trained physician. If a doctor and a patient make that determination, well, then go home.
Right.
People want to go home from the hospital. One patient from North Carolina testified before the Congress that she had to delay her chemotherapy for 6 weeks due to an infection she developed after being sent home too early. I don't make this up. Last month alone, we have a lifetime TV petition that supports this legislation. It garnered 725,000 signatures. Since this effort started over the years, the petition has been signed 24 million
wow.
times. That tells you something about the need that is out there.
Well, it really is critically important. And I think it's unfortunate that these financial issues kind of take over what really should be appropriate medical care, mm-hmm. and what's in the best interest mm-hmm. of the patient.
Right. Well, insurance companies shouldn't make the decisions. Physicians and mm-hmm. patients should be making these decisions.
Now, you've also been very actively involved in the screening and early detection efforts for cervical cancer.
Right.
And you're in fact a founding member of the Partnership to End Cervical Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the main focus for this organization?
I'd say being on this subcommittee it's been such a learning experience with regard to health issues. I can recall when folks from the National Institutes of Health came up to testify before our committee, and 4,000 women die every year of cervical cancer. Mm. But they were clear when they said to us that, in fact, we could eradicate cervical cancer. That's staggering to me. And that where I work, we have it within our capacity to provide the kinds of resources, again, that can be utilized in this way. And that means saving, or potentially saving, 4,000 women a year. Think about this. On September 9/11, we lost close to 4,000 people at the trade centers. Those people went to work, and they didn't go back home again. We went to war, as we should have, I believe, and I voted to go to war in Afghanistan because of what happened there that day and the loss of 4,000 lives. We are losing 4,000 women every single year to cervical cancer. And we couldn't predict what happened on September 11th. It happened. We know what's happening here. We can do something about it, which is, I said to myself at that time, my God, then what, we have an obligation to go to war against cervical cancer, to eradicate it. And that is what I believe we can do. I think that what we're able to do here with this effort is about vaccination, and we have now an opportunity to be able to do that. We need to make the information known to people, and this is what we can do with the resources of applying there. We have the partnership is what we want to do is to include vaccination to prevent cervical cancer, along with screening, routine preventive health care for all women in the United States. We're focused in on four barriers that impede access to cervical cancer vaccination. We want to deal with minimizing the health disparities that exist in the United States, and that has to do with minorities and minority communities. We want to make sure that there's health insurance coverage that is adequate to take care of the course of treatment. And we want to ensure that physicians embrace vaccination as a way to eliminate cervical cancer. And we want to provide the tools that are necessary for women and girls to understand about cervical cancer. Again, when you think about illnesses that can get eradicated, my God, why aren't we going there? Why aren't we doing it? And my view is that we have an obligation to do it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I applaud you for all of your strong efforts in that regard. Now, one issue that I thought maybe we could just touch upon, which has received a great deal of publicity, is the whole notion of nationalized health insurance. And as you are, have been such a staunch advocate for health issues and for providing for affordable, high-quality health care to individuals not only in the state of Connecticut, but really throughout the United States, you know, where do you see things heading with respect to providing universal health insurance?
Well, let me just say, I think what we need to do in terms of health care reform, and you know, we attempted to deal with health care reform in 1993 and failed for a variety of reasons. The issue that is as uppermost with regard to health care reform is cost. The affordability of health care is the what we have to address, and we have to look at making it, one, affordable and accessible to everyone. But we also want to be able to try to preserve choice. And in that context, that is, and what we're looking at in terms of healthcare reform is a system that says if you like what you have now, if it is providing you with healthcare coverage and the benefits that you need in your life and your family's life, then let us make sure that you can keep that choice. So we are not saying that everyone is going to change their healthcare system and go into one system and that is going to be a government-run system. That is not what we're talking about.
And unfortunately, I think that's a misperception.
It is a misperception, but by those who don't want to see healthcare move forward in the way that we need to, because we've got to deal with cost and we've got to deal with accessibility. 44 million people in this country today do not have any health insurance, and most of them are working. They're working in small businesses. And it's not that small business doesn't want to provide healthcare. They can't afford to do it. So it is... Let's maintain your choice. Let's look at what your out-of-pocket costs are. Try to bring some sense to that. Maybe, but you know, capping the costs on an annual basis. Look at subsidies to businesses to be able to provide health care. Look at giving people what we call a public option, so that they can choose between a private health insurance and some sort of a public program that they pay for. It's not free. It is a program that they pay for, which meets criteria that would be established at the federal level for benefits, but that would be based on other benefit packages, so that they would have a comprehensive benefit package that they might avail themselves of, if that is something that meets their needs. Because today, individuals you on their own can't get health insurance. We would eliminate this whole issue of pre-existing condition, so that you can't decide not to insure someone because they have a pre-existing a condition, and that there would be no lifetime or annual benefits on limits on benefits for a participant or for a beneficiary. I think we have to try to take a look at how we deal with the issues of cost and affordability, and make sure that our system allows for everyone to be able to have coverage, and businesses have the opportunity to offer it, and that the notion that, again, that insurance companies will be making all of the decisions in this effort, in my view, we have to turn that concept around. Insurance is about shared responsibility and risk. And people don't decide to get sick. They get sick, and when they have those challenges in their lives, they need to be able to get affordable health care, and they need to be able to have access to that health care. My family could take care of my needs as a someone who was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. It shouldn't be that someone else can't get the access to the treatment that's necessary in order to be able to survive. We also need to look at health technology and get the best advice as to how that may happen. We need to take a look at prescription drugs, bringing the cost of those prescription drugs out. How do you decrease the cost in the system today? And that's going to be the goal. It's going to be a tough couple of months to pull all of that together. But I think what I'm most optimistic about is that it is front and center. It is at the top of the national agenda. And the president has said that we cannot tackle economic recovery in this nation unless we tackle health care and its costs.
Well, Congresswoman DeLauro, it's amazing how quickly the time has gone. We thank you for being on the show. I particularly want to thank you and applaud you for all of your efforts on behalf of the state of Connecticut, and also Yale New Haven Hospital, Yale Cancer Center, for all that you've done with respect to healthcare reform, and cancer research. And we look forward to having you on a future show to hear about the success that you and the president have with respect to this whole healthcare reform issue.
Thank you very, very much, and thanks for your good work. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'd like to thank our special guest this evening, Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, for her time. Until next time, I'm Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions or would like to share your comments, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.